It's one thing to listen to doom and gloom about food and fertilizer shortages, skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, or your job being outsourced overseas or eliminated due to automation. It's quite another thing to hear practical, immediately actionable advice from experts who can help you reduce the fear, anxiety, and burden of these problems.
Tune in now to the Surviving Hard Times podcast from the Finding Genius Foundation with Richard Jacobs. Before we begin, a note from our sponsor. I'm Richard Jacobs, Executive Director of the nonprofit Finding Genius Foundation and host of the Finding Genius podcast. In late 2016, I was rear-ended at 65 miles an hour by a truck on the highway, which sent me off-road into a ditch. The impact of the collision gave me a concussion and other injuries. At the hospital, a CT scan showed that I had thyroid nodules, which turned out to be cancer. It was then, when I had a biopsy in my neck, that I realized even if I was a millionaire, I wouldn't want a second or a third biopsy due to the pain and the invasiveness of it. And appointments at that time for thyroid experts were 3 to 6 months out, and I was worried about dying now, even if that was irrational. So because of this, I've decided to raise money to conduct a literature review on steroids, on the causes of anxiety and depression, a condition that affects well over 50 million people in the United States and hundreds of millions worldwide. Our goal is to create a codex, a guide, that reveals all possible treatments for anxiety and depression for people that live with the condition, or for loved ones that have it, as my wife and my son do. To find out more about our fundraiser, visit findinggeniusfoundation.org and click on Current Initiatives. And now, to our guest. Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Surviving Hard Times podcast, sponsored by the Finding Genius Foundation.
I have Zelfina Rubio-Ames, PhD. She's an assistant professor. She's part of the Small Fruit Extension program in the Department of Horticulture. This is at the Tifton campus at University of Georgia. And we're going to talk about her focus on blueberries and other small fruits. So, Zelfina, thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, if you would, tell me a bit about your background and then what's your current focus right now within horticulture?
Yes, sure. So first of all, I'm originally from Peru, and that's where I did my bachelor's degree. And I did my master's and PhD at the University of Florida, mainly looking at how cultural management practices affect post-harvest quality of table grapes and also peaches, stone fruits. And I also work in the industry for like a couple of years. I also work in the Peruvian industry, always looking at post-harvest quality. I am now here at the University of Georgia. I'm an assistant professor here in the Tifton campus. And my main areas of research is blueberry, because blueberries are a big crop here in the state of Georgia. And I looked at how we can improve the cultural practices and how we can, you know, reduce inputs and do farming more sustainable without affecting yield and fruit quality. I also work on blackberries. The blackberry industry in Georgia is small, but it's growing. So I'm also looking in how to improve the production system in order to maintain yield and fruit quality.
So what's involved in growing blueberries? Do they grow on bushes, or, you know, how do they grow? How do they take?
Yeah, blueberries are bushes. And one particular thing about blueberries is that they grow in acidic soil pH. So it is very important for blueberry growers to maintain the acidity of the soil without actually lowering and making it that, you know, very acidic, because then otherwise the plants will die. So it's a really fine line on maintaining soil pH to grow blueberries properly.
Okay. And then what about the harvesting of them? How does that work?
Well, blueberries are mainly harvested by hand. There are some mechanically harvest, you know, operations, but it's mainly for the frozen industry. The blueberries that go into the fresh market, they are mainly harvested by hand.
Are they hand picked, or do machines pick them, or, you know, how do blueberries come off the bush most effectively?
Yes, they are hand picked. The blueberries that go for the fresh market are mainly hand-picked, and the blueberries that go for the frozen market, they're usually mechanically picked. They machine pick.
Is it mechanical or is it by hand? You seem to say both. Which one method is preferred?
I'm saying that if you harvest for the fresh market, then it's hand harvest. And if you harvest for the frozen market, it's most of the time mechanically harvest.
Okay. What's the trade-off with hand or mechanical harvesting?
Well, the trade-off is, of course, labor. You know, for a hand harvest, we need a lot of people. And, you know, the agricultural industry in the U.S., it's, you know, suffering for like high cost labor and also for shortage of labor. So it is, you know, very important for growers to have that labor, but it's also expensive. So that's why the machine harvest comes in, but not all the varieties are ready to be machine picked. And it, as I said, it's going to be depending on the market and how the market is and things like that for the grower to decide if they're going to be, you know, hand picking or machine picking.
What's the benefit of hand picking? You said it's
the
more labor.
The benefit of hand picking is, of course, you damage the fruit less. There is a more harvest efficiency when you do machine pick because the person goes and harvests that blueberry that is already mature. And then on the opposite, with machine pick, sometimes they could harvest berries that are not fully ripe. They have to discard those berries when they go through the packing house. So there is, you know, some losses when they do machine pick. But however, the benefit is that they don't need as much labor.
Okay. How long does it take for blueberries to produce blueberry fruits from when you first plant the seeds to grow a bush?
And it's about 2 years, then they can start picking the berries, you know, but they usually, the bushes come into like full production by year four.
And how long do they produce for until they stop?
It's going to be depending on the variety or on the type of blueberry. And in blueberries are divided into three types of species. So here in Georgia, we grow the Southern High Bush and the Rabbit Eye. The Southern High Bush lasts about 10 to 15 years, you know, more into like the lower end, and then the rabbit eyes are usually about 15 years old, but it all depends on how, you know, the grower managed the field.
Right, but you get, what, about 10 years, maybe 12 years of productivity?
Yeah, between 10 to 12 years of productivity.
All right, so what is some of the experimentation you're doing to improve blueberries? Are you trying to improve yields or size, or what are you working on?
I am trying to reduce labor. To reduce production costs. So one of the main areas of my research in terms of production costs is fertilizer usage. So not a lot of research done on how much we can reduce chemical fertilization in blueberries. So I'm looking at how reducing chemical fertilization of phosphorus and potassium can affect yield and post-harvest quality. And we're looking into reducing because chemical fertilizers have become very expensive. So, and then the production cost per acre had increased for blueberry growers. So trying to see how we can reduce the use of chemical fertilizers can help growers into reducing production costs. And also not only because, you know, a production cost is important, but also because, you know, as we input into the soil more chemical fertilizers, we're also changing the soil structure and physical properties and chemical properties. So we also have to start thinking about soil health and quality and how incorporating these chemical fertilizers could affect soil health and quality. So those are the main areas of my research at the moment.
How do you make sure the soil is acidic? What's added to it? Or, you know, how does that happen so that the blueberries can grow?
Well, first of all, Georgia soils are acidic by nature. But when the sides are not acidic, we incorporate sulfur to reduce the pH of the soil. Usually here in Georgia, we're main producers of cotton and peanuts. So those soils that want to be transferred producing or planting cotton or peanuts to blueberries, it is recommended to apply sulfur to acidify the soil and lower it to that according to that adequate pH that the blueberry needs. It is recommended usually to do that sulfur application to the soil a year before the blueberries are planting.
Well, what's the trade-offs with using sulfur? What unintended consequences does it have?
Well, it's going to be depending on, you know, what the soil is at the moment, it's the sulfur it's applied. For example, if we're transitioning in a land that was, you know, farmed for several years with cotton, you know, that soil was lime, usually to increase the pH, because as I said, and Georgia soils have lower acidic pH. So when we apply the sulfur, we're creating that, you know, chemical reaction. But we also added lime before. So it is kind of like a competition, and it takes time for that sulfur to kick in to start, you know, incorporated into the soil structure. And so that it's basically something that it's, I wouldn't say it is, you know, a disadvantage, but it like takes time. So that's why, you know, it's very important to do that sulfur application a year in advance.
So what are some complementary crops that could be used for cover crops or rotational crops in a blueberry area?
Well, or, you know, you get the soil with sulfur and apply and you know, the pH, it's somehow reduced. It's very important to, you know, plant just any cover crop. You know, usually growers do like rye, and they starting fertilize on that rye with ammonium sulfate, because blueberries are also very specific on the type of nitrogen they take. They don't take nitrate. The nitrate form of nitrogen, they take ammonium, the ammonium form of nitrogen. So that's why it's, you know, incorporate the sulfur, then you plant a cover crop, and then you start fertilizing that cover crop with ammonium sulfate, just so you can have the pH of your soil ready to plant blueberries.
But if they last for 10 years, what do you have to do each year to keep them up that's different from the first year to make sure they keep producing?
It is very important, of course, fertilize with the adequate amount. You know, when we harvest the fruit, we are removing nutrients from that production system. So it's very important to return those nutrients back into the production system so the plant is not stressed. There is several, you know, fungicide applications that you need to control for any diseases and things like that. Adequate irrigation and also pruning, it's very important to maintain a balanced plant. We want a bush that it has a balanced root system and vegetative production also. So we need a balanced plant. So that is why it's very important. You know, sometimes if you apply too much nitrogen, then you have a lot of vegetative growth and then the root doesn't grow as much. So you create an imbalanced plant, and also it could affect that amount of yield the grower has. So all those things need to be considered so we can extend the life of the plant as much as we can.
Okay, what kind of problems do growers run into with blueberry plants? What's typical for them? Certain diseases or seasonality problems?
Yeah, so what it's that from all this time working with blueberries, one thing that I've been seeing and it's very common, it's inadequate pH. As I said, you know, blueberries are very different from other crops that they need an acidic pH. So several times when the grower transitions from a crop that is not acidic to blueberries, there is an issue. So that's very common, not having the adequate pH. The other problem is when the pH goes very low, when it just causes toxicity in the plant. So when we reduce the pH from, it goes below 4.5, aluminium becomes soluble in the soil and then it causes toxicity in the plant. So I think the main issue, you know, besides, you know, pests or diseases, it's just having that adequate pH.
Okay. How are organic blueberries grown versus traditional ones where they spray, you know, I guess pesticides? In organic, do they spray anything on blueberries or how is it different? Do you guys produce them?
Yes, they do spray a different set of regulator organic, you know, pesticides that it's, you know, and so there are blueberries could be grown organically just by applying those certified organic, you know, pesticides or fertilizers as well.
Okay, and then you mentioned blackberries is small, but it's growing. What some of the important things that you need to know about blackberry growing?
Well, blackberry is different than blueberries. They don't need a very acidic pH. So in case that, you know, here in Georgia, if we plan to plant blackberries, it is very important to increase the pH if the soil, because the soil is very acidic. So it goes that's the main difference. It is also very important to choose a variety suitable for the area that the grower is going to plant. There it's, you know, several like post-harvest quality problems on blackberries. For example, that red droplet regression, that it's when the blackberry is harvested, and then that the whole berry is black, but then, you know, after it's harvest, then you'll start seeing like red droplets. So instead of, so it kind of like goes back, that's what's called reversion, because it goes back to being red as is if it's, if it was immature. So that's something very common to see, and it's usually linked to fertilization practices, or it's also linked in some other cases on the weather. So it is very important to see, you know, what variety it's more suitable for your region and what it's the post-harvest quality of the variety they decide to plant.
Well, I was going to ask you, does coffee grow in an acidic environment? Could coffee be a companion plant to blueberries?
I am not sure if coffee grows into an acidic in acidic soil, but a tropical plant, I don't know how adaptable it will be for Georgia. I know there are some colleagues at the University of Florida are being trying to see if they can grow coffee in Florida, but I'm not very well. No, but I don't know. I don't have a lot of knowledge on that topic.
Oh, I understand. Okay. Well, very good. So as an extension agent, do you work with the public very much, or is all of your research just for the university? Like what is your common duties in addition to working on blueberries and blackberries?
Well, I work for the state of Georgia, and I do serve the growers in the state of Georgia and, you know, all across, you know, the U.S. If, you know, somebody has any question regarding how to grow blueberries in Georgia, I'm the person to contact. I receive calls from like small growers, big growers, homeowners. So I'll just cover any issue that could be happening in the blueberry industry in Georgia. I get a lot of calls from different people, and usually here in Georgia, the way the extension specialists work, it's that we relied a lot on the county agents. We have 162 counties in the state of Georgia, and each county has an agent, a county agent. And usually when somebody has an issue, they contact the county agent. And if the county agent does not have the knowledge on the topic, they contact the extension specialists. So if there's something that they don't know about blueberries, they'll contact me, and I'll help them troubleshoot whatever it's going on.
Okay. Well, very good. And Zulfida, what's the best way for people to reach you?
You can email. Email, and also my website. If you go to UGA Small Fruits, you'll on the right side, you'll find the website, my lab's website. So email, it's the best way to reach me.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking about blueberries and a little bit about blackberries. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Before you stop listening, ask yourself, what are one or two useful things you heard on this podcast that can help you overcome food and fertilizer shortages, skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, or your job being outsourced overseas or eliminated due to automation? Please like and subscribe and tell your friends and family about their Surviving Hard Times podcast. We're all going to need help now and in the near future.